We're going to finish lesson one today. I do want to mention that Yvette and I had decided to do a special class on Saturday nights at 7 at our house for the next two Saturday nights. It's going to be on communication and personalities. It is very much relates to marriage, but it could be relate to a lot of things. We're going to be studying biblically some principles of communication, but then we're going to look at some tools that people have used to analyze personality types and tendencies. And I think you'll find it very, very useful. It's very helpful, I know, to Yvette and I before we married. And so everyone's invited. You know, I've been talking to college students that, you know, would find this study interesting, and they're not even dating, but it would be helpful for them in their dating, you know, and other things. I think it's just some good material, and so we're going to do that for the next 2 weeks. We wanted to get this before this current student group went home, give them an opportunity. Last week, we talked about how important it was for one to marry the right person. And we talked about last week, we gave some examples in the life of Abraham. And you remember how Abraham had chosen his faithful servant, the master of his house. And let me tell you, a guy that's in charge of Abraham's house is a man that's going to know God, and you see that he knows God. And Abraham gives specific instructions. Go back to my homeland. I want you to get someone for my son Isaac, and don't take Isaac there. You know, here the promises of God are in mind. We're going to be here. This is the land we're taking. But find me a woman for my son, and bring her back. And you see, throughout this process, prayer and concern and seriousness. And you see, God answered prayer. And how this woman was brought back, and became the wife of Isaac. And so we talked last week as we concluded our class about how important we as parents, we can have a huge impact upon who our children marry. But as we said from the class one, you got to take it seriously. Today in our society, I can't choose a wife for my son. I can't choose a husband for my daughter. No, you can't per se. But you can do a lot of things that have an enormous impact on that. First off, you can talk about the importance of marrying the right person. And you talk about it, and talk about it, and talk about it, and it means something to you, and you talk to them. I talk to my child's children a lot about the value of having a Christian mate. And I'm sorry to say that, particularly my daughter Emily, when we were up in Charlottesville, she had a lot of examples to look at. You know, I mean, there were so many issues and problems that she faced with her classmates up there, and I would simply explain to her, okay, here's a problem. You know, a divorce, you know, alcohol in the home, and this and that and the other, and all these crazy things. My daughter's exposed to more things than she should have ever been exposed to as a young adult, much less a middle schooler. But it gave us opportunity to teach. And, you know, at first she didn't, you know, if I knew what I was talking about, but when she saw the continued disasters and problems, you know, it's kind of gotten starting to see through. Now, we by no means, by the way, with my daughter have won the battle, so I just want you to know that. You know, that's what you've got to stay engaged with, and you never let up. But you have to be determined in this matter. And we pointed out there within our culture, there are things we can do. Walker, do you know of any families up in the Birmingham area that just had Christians in their home all the time? What's that? Yeah. And how many of their children married non-Christians? Yes. And the ones I knew, none of them. I mean, I'm thinking of the Bragwells, and I'm thinking of others, and their home was a Grand Central Station for other Christian kids. Now, not everyone can handle that. I know that we love to have a lot of people in, but it's got to be a little more organized, you know, and we'll talk about that in the personality type studies and other things. But you can make an impact here. And so, again, it's like going to war. You can't, I taught them, and they know they ought to marry Christian. There's a difference between a casual approach and an approach where you are determined.
lovingly, not trying to cram it down their throat when they get older. We're not talking about, here, you're going to go right there, mate, here, this is what you're going to do. It takes wisdom, it takes prayer, just like the servant of God, from the servant of Abraham that went to find the wife for Isaac, prayed and looked and gained wisdom, kept learning, was willing to go in the right direction. Now, I want to talk about another area that has dramatically impacted the church, dramatically impacted this culture. Nathan drove me back from the Atlanta airport last night, and we were talking a lot about the culture. In my opinion, we're facing some things in our country that is unique in history. And when you say something like that, you kind of, oh, come on, you know, there's nothing new under the sun. I'm not sure that we're not seeing something new, and that is, in many communities, there's an illegitimacy rate of something like 93%. The community I grew up in, this is dealing with minority communities, but it's spreading. We, in our wealth, have decided there's no consequences to divorce. There's no consequences to having children out of marriage. There's no consequences to what that brings, and we're going to reap a fruit of that in this country. But the problem we have is we're trying to have our children select the mate. And God's law, in light of what this culture is doing, seems impossible to follow. No, it's not. Let's look at just basically in a simple way. This is not going to be a study on marriage, divorce, or marriage per se, although we can talk about that this morning. In Matthew 19:9, Jesus said this, "And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery. And whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery." Now, as we begin to analyze this, we find, and I'll just put it in the simplest form I know how. Who is eligible to marry? I believe you can put who is eligible to marry within three groups. First group, those who had never married. I think we're safe on that. And one who's never married can remarry. The Bible says in 1 Corinthians 7 that a man can have a wife. Well, you know, that there is the right to marry. The second category of one who can remarry is one who's made his die. And you find that in Romans chapter 7. And verses 1 through 4, you see that exception given there. So if your mate dies, you can remarry. And then thirdly, those who have put away their mate for the cause of fornication. Now, I'm just putting it simply, and I realize we can get into debates and all kinds of discussion, but as simple as I can put it, why do we need to know this? Why do we need to know this truth? Let's suppose your child wants to become close friends. Let's say your child is a young man, is say a teenager, maybe in college, maybe 20. And he wants to become real close friends with a woman that's been divorced for any cause. Unscriptural divorce. Any problems with that? Why? Why is there a problem with that?
Because you date who you marry.
What's that?
You'll marry who you date. And once love comes into the equation, as far as physical attraction, or once you're mentally joined to that person, it's harder to make that kind of decision.
Yeah. And now, we don't need to even worry about that until you're around somebody like that, right? We don't need to worry about those questions. You see my point. My children need to know early on. I will tell you, I've seen grandparents. The church I preached at, North Gardendale, I saw some things I never dreamed I'd see. Man used to preach in the Birmingham area. His wife died. There was a grandmother in our congregation that had her husband died, and she jumped into a quick marriage, and that marriage lasted weeks. I can never marry again. I can never marry again. And then she started closely associating years later with this man that used to preach. And they came to me. She can remarry. When he put away that man no doubt looked at a woman and lusted after her. So that was adultery. And so she can remarry. And they start coming with all these arguments. Just crazy arguments. And finally, in tears one night, the woman told me, "If I can't marry him, I can't serve God." You know what happened? She married him. A grandmother. And the things that she wrote and this man wrote to her faithful grandchildren and other things, and it ended in tragedy. You know what the man did a few years later? This man that just forced this thing in and they had this marriage, he ended up putting a bullet in his head in the bathtub one night because he didn't like how his life was going. I'm not making those stories up, but I've seen this happen at the younger level and the older level. If somebody is not eligible to marry, you don't need to be close friends with someone of the opposite sex. You don't need to do that. Older you? Now, I'm sorry, I'm jumping on, but this is so important. I've seen people that they want to study this thing. They want a way to study this thing when they finally meet somebody. And that's very hard. So, again, you're going to be challenged in this area. And so again, I think we made this point, and I'll be preaching on this some too soon. We'll talk about this. And so again, be wise. Be wise here. Could I say, if you care, be around somebody that's not eligible to marry, I'm not saying that. But I am saying that there's great power in the wisdom we've given you, and Satan is very capable. Now, another question we want to raise in any discussion on marriage, divorce, remarriage, and what we just talked about. I mean, we probably need to do a lot more study on that. And we will in time. Okay, now, second question, is this person a Christian? Give me some suggestions, class, before we just go through this outline. Why should a Christian marry another Christian? Give me the advantages of that versus marrying somebody in the world.
Sake of the children.
What's that?
For the sake of the children.
And for the sake of the children, and what does that mean?
Well, home with Christian continuity is more likely to produce faithful Christian children.
Okay. What else?
They both have the same goal.
Have the same goal. What's the purpose of marriage? Yeah, that's good. Now, there you go, right there. Help each other get to heaven. Now, if that's not your goal in marrying, we need to teach your children that. You're going to find somebody to help you go down. Is that what they're thinking? I'm going to marry not a Christian because that not a Christian is going to help me get to heaven. Okay. I'd like you to explain that one. What are other reasons you should marry a Christian and a non-Christian? I mean, it's along the same lines. You might follow one. Matter of fact, the odds are you will. You're entering into a relationship that the odds are long against you. I'm talking about Christians who marry non-Christians, as a rule, fall away. And if you don't believe me in that, you should talk to somebody that maybe didn't fall away, married non-Christian, never converted their mind. And so again, that's why I try to tell my kids, we talk about some of those things. So, but anyway, some of the things we've seen in our outline is that folks, the home is powerful only when God's will rules. Because if you don't have people that are Christians, what are people at their normal fleshly self? Who are we without the Lord, without His power? Who are we? What do we do? What's our thinking? Tell me the thinking of the world.
What we want to do.
That's right. Selfish. Me and mine. And two selfish people really work well together, don't they? it could be. You might be a couple and you want to sleep political power. Not that we've had anything like that related to the presidency or something like that. And you share political power and be selfish and the political power holds you together. That's miserable. Without God, we tend to be selfish and self-centered. And so again, we need the Lord. Did Paul think about, he was not married and he was eligible to marry. And so Paul said he'd marry anybody, right? Bryce, how about reading 1 Corinthians 9? 5?
We have no right to take along a believing wife as do also the other apostles, the brothers of the Lord and sinners.
So Paul, if he was going to find somebody to marry, he was going to be a believing wife. Okay. Well, let's keep looking, okay? Now, am I saying that it is sinful for a Christian and a non-Christian to be married? Well, the relationship is not sinful. If the relationship was sinful, then you would have to separate. And what I find in the Scriptures is that, no, there are circumstances where Christians are married to non-Christians, and instructions are given. Like to the Christian woman, wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. That's a tough place to be in. And you know, it, let's say, as a woman, you're married to a non-Christian. Or let's say you're married to a worldly Christian, not a servant Lord. You know, you can end up, by the way, just to make clear, you can end up in more trouble marrying a worldly Christian than marrying someone in the world. I just want to make that clear. You need to marry somebody who really loves God and is doing right. Now, not that they're perfect, but you need to marry somebody who takes the Lord seriously. Now, what happens to the wife whose husband is not serving God? What are some of the challenges? You attend services all the time, right? Well, let's say, what if your husband wants to move to, let's say, a place in Oregon? You have a faithful church where you can drive to, right? Not unlikely. What if you have one car and he wants to work that morning? Well, maybe brother or sister give you a ride, but you're going to find, how about giving? You can give as you prosper, right? I don't know. As a wife, you're to be a submission to your own husband. And let's suppose you've got children at home and you're taking care of those children, and Your husband controls the checkbook. Can you take that checkbook away and write something over his desires? You got some struggles. I'm not necessarily telling you got all the answers to what you face in these situations, but you face some extraordinarily difficult situations. Again, you're talking about, give me a book, chapter, and verse for helping the marriages find somebody to help you go to heaven, right here. 1 Peter 3:7. Husbands, likewise, well with them, that is, with wives, with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, as being heirs together of the grace of life. There's the verse right there. That your prayers may not be hindered. And so again, the best thing you can do for your marriage is to love God. And when you love God, serve Him, you will be a servant. Isn't that what Christian is? Jesus said, my followers came to rule and have people serve them, right? No. His followers to wash one another's feet. They're to be servants. And you see, if you start there, I'm in my marriage, I'm a servant. It's not what I like, or my I get mad at something, I want that thing because it hurts me. I think about others. That's like you're being a Christian. So again, we need to marry Christians. Okay, now, I got some statistics for you. And these are old statistics. And the old statistics, I'll tell you, these are optimistic statistics. Okay, if you got the outline, these are old statistics. They are much worse now. I don't know of anybody that's done the survey, but let's look at this. Mixed marriages on page 3. This is probably done in the 60s. But it says 143 Christian young people in the Miami congregation have married during the past 20 years. 79 married non-Christians. Of these, 57 left the church. What's that percentage? Anybody got a mathematical brain could figure that out? That's a pretty high percentage, isn't it? With 25 being divorced, and you would see today had a much higher rate if it's today. 22 are still faithful. And 14 have converted their mates. Now, when a Christian is going to marry a non-Christian, tell me, you can tell me now, without even having an example of this, what do they say they're going to do? They're good people, they love me, they're going to let me go to services, they're not going to stand in the way of anything, and I think I'll be able to convert her. Okay, and this is old statistics. Let's look at the numbers here. 100 and see, we got 79, and out of the 79, 14 converted their minds. Anybody want to do the math on that? Yeah. Now, my brother, I mean, you may say, well, it's going to be different for me, because my loved one loves me. What's that mean? Love. What is love? Romantic love? Isn't that romantic love? And it'll always be in the marriage. You'll never leave. Right? Yeah, that comes and goes, okay? That does come and go. What kind of love never leaves marriage? If you've got the love of God, and you maintain that. Now, if you want your marriage to last, you want the love of God in that marriage. And is that what you're talking about when your mate, you say your mate loves you? Well, then he should be a Christian if he's got the love of God. You see my point here? And I know I'm preaching to the choir, but this is a sermon you're going to need to preach. And you're going to need to preach in 100 ways. And you need to preach it when your children are young. You're going to have teaching opportunities. And I'll tell you, there were times I know in working with my daughter, I talked to her. Okay, here your friend is, got this in your home. I want to tell you, there's people don't love God. They don't study the Word of God. There's one, and my daughter, probably the best friend she had, were raised by atheists. Okay. That was the best situation we had up in Charlottesville. And she had one friend that was raised by a woman who claimed she was an atheist, and she started visiting church, and there were some good things going on there, but the mother ended up crushing that. And it was very sad to me to learn after we moved away that this daughter, at a young age, started going into some terrible things. This is in middle school. And then Emily finally came to me, Dad, you're right. You told me some things, you're right. I'm not saying that we do it perfectly. I'm telling you, in our effort, this is something we teach. Now, like, we're super right. This, everybody's wrong. You've got opportunities to talk to your children. So talk to them. Any of you parents have anything you want to share along these lines? Anything you've done or seen or something along these lines? Just speak right up if you got something. Let's keep moving along here, okay? Now, another great article that I think I have in this material is by Bill Hall on Young Lady Marry a Christian. And again, you will see, again, we've already talked about some of these problems in attending services, problems in getting, problems in training children. You know, I've seen godly mothers who've done the job. In some ways, my own home, not say that I came out of, had that similarity. My dad did dark door church building. But it was my mother that was the driving force. And my brother and I both faithful Christians today. And she was coming out of domination, but she loved the Lord, loved the Word of God. And she was determined to try to teach children. And so again, I'll tell you, if you don't have your mate helping you, you still can have an impact. You can do it. It's just harder. As a young man, father's not a Christian. What's a young man? Who's the one who wants to be like? Want to be like his father. And when I got high school, I didn't attend church. I just dropped out. I mean, my mother tried, got frustrated. You know, I remember I tried because I got smoking. My dad was a smoker, fortunately. I tried jumping into that too fast and I almost threw up, you know. That was the end of that, you know. But I want to be like my dad. And so again, these are things that, you know, you ought to consider. I ask young people, okay, you're going to marry a non-Christian. You're going to go ahead and marry a non-Christian, okay? One of the things I ask them to do is talk with those who've done that and find out what can happen. One other thing, okay, you know, I'm going to give you a little strategies, parents, okay? You got your son or daughter dating somebody you wished they wouldn't date. You know. All right.
I haven't been there yet, so, but I've seen that. And I was, okay.
Now, I will say this, if they're dating somebody, I'm really excited. So the advice I give them works both ways. So don't, if you hear my, me giving my children this advice, don't assume that, you know, I'm trying. But what I like to do is this. And when Yvette and I dated, we had a little saying between us, J-A-M-O-T, Jamot, just a matter of time. And what we meant by that is we will never rush into marriage. If you have the right kind of relationship built on the love of God, is it going to get stronger or weaker over time? It's going to get stronger. You know why a lot of people jump into marriage?
I'm afraid I'm going to lose the person.
You don't need to marry them if you're afraid you're going to lose them. Jumping into something doesn't make it, you know, better. And so even at 9 days, look, we've got any doubts, we'll put this thing on. If we've got any doubts, we don't have to rush into marriage because we have confidence in this relationship. And so I like to appeal to people that way. If I think they ought, well, look, if you've got a good situation to marry today, you'll have a good situation to marry next year. And if there's some doubts, give it time. Now, why does time have an advantage here if you think they're in a bad relationship? How do you know, really get to know a person? It's when everybody's going easy. You know, you're dressed up, and you're kind of not under any stress at all, and you kind of put your mask on, and, you know, be the kind of person that you... That makes things real easy, isn't it? And that's how you get to know a person, right? How do you get to know a person? How do you really get to know a person?
Problems.
That's right. You don't know a person until you go through some problems and see the other side of the coin. And I think it's good in dating that you have some time to be able to see that. One of my favorite marriage jokes, I'll tell it here, it's that marriage is like getting a telephone call at 3 a.m. in the morning. You first get the ring, and then you wake up. Yeah, and the point there is that a lot of times, you know, in the dating process that's idealistic, you don't have to face problems, but it's good in the dating process to go through some struggles and challenges and to see that other side of things. And if you don't think a person's got a good relationship, you can say, give this some more time. It alarms me when I see a young person ignore the advice of their parents and chug ahead and jump in. That happens. Comments on this, anything? Well, that's my best advice for you is to, you know, try to give it some time. And sometimes people wake up and sit. They see things they never were seeing in the short term of the infatuation. Another thing I tell my children is this, make all necessary changes before marriage. Anybody want to explain what I mean by that? If you're going to tell your children, before you marry, you need to make all necessary changes. What does that mean? Let's say this. I got a drinking problem. But you know, after I marry you because you love me and understand me, that's going to go away. Okay? Is that good? No. I mean, you know, you won't deal with that before they marry. And in matter of fact, you want to make sure that one's knocked out. What's some other necessary changes? Being Christian. I'm saying you should have your mate be a Christian. And that needs to be tested. Before you jump in marriage. I'm not making a hard, fast rule here, okay? Because I can't give you book, chapter, verse. Make all necessary changes for marriage. I'm just giving you wisdom. And I try to emphasize that to my children, and you need to teach that to yours. Okay. In the remaining time we have, how do you help your children find the right kind of mate? You know, how do you do that? What, if you're going to talk to your children, you're going to talk to your children. Okay, how do I marry a Christian, Dad? How am I going to do that? What's that? Yeah. Auburn fans tend to become very close friends, almost uniquely, with Alabama fans and watch games together. And some cases they do. You know, but Yvette not that way. But that's, you know, that's another story. But generally, you don't. Generally, you become interested, let's say, in things that you hold in common. It's the very basis of relationship. And so the most important thing to you is serving God, going to heaven.
Then you know you're going to bless the people that way. But guess what happens? You're so enthusiastic about serving God and going to heaven, somebody's not. Will they want to date you?
Unlikely.
Sometimes they do, because they like how you look or something else. They see you different. But what's going to happen over time? When this is really important to you. It's not going to work.
You know, I remember people, when I first became a Christian, I'd go out on dates and I'd quote scripture to my dad. And I remember I had a friend tell me, you shouldn't do that. Oh, I do that. I mean, I was enthusiastic, zealous, and if somebody was going to be around me, that was going to be the way I was. And so there's a lot of people who want to date me. And you know what? That was okay. I ended up dating somebody like quote scripture to me. Now, how about that? But seriously, you know, that is one of the things. It's so simple. It is so simple. Then one of the things I try to tell my kids, because, you know, they'll have the crushes on somebody that looks sweet and good, and but they don't, oh, you're a crazy radical. Oh, man. You know, and I tell them, that's a shortcut. If they don't like you for your zeal for the Lord, it's a shortcut. Trust me. It's saving you a lot of pain. I liken it into when Joseph was giving advice to his family when they came into Egypt. Why did he tell them to tell Pharaoh, remember, that we are sheep herders? And why did he need to tell Pharaoh that we're sheep herders? Because every sheep herder is an abomination to the Egyptians. You know how he did that? He wanted right up front there to be a separation. And that's what I want. And that's what you want. And so again, you know, you're going to find somebody to marry you. If you'll trust God and let that be your first thing in your life, you'll find somebody that'll have that same desire. So again, those are some things to teach your children here. It's really important. Like Ruth 3:11 as an example. You talk about reputation. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do before all you that you request. For all the people of my town know that you're a virtuous woman. So, again, hard lesson. See, one of the things, I'll say another thing about raising children. I'm not sadistic. That there are times I'm thankful to God that my children suffer. When they go through something doing right and they're rejecting, they're hurting, you know, I support them. But at the same time, I'm going, yes, this is how faith grows. You know, I don't want them to be overburdened by the hurt, but I don't want them not to see that and face that. And sometimes as Christians, oh, my child is going to get hurt. Oh, I don't want them to. Well, that's a real opportunity for them to grow in faith. I want them to be able to face Satan and the array of things that he throws out. And he's got to have faith. Faith doesn't come through ease. Real faith generally comes through conflict. And you can look at Romans 3, 3 through 5. You can look at James 1, 2 through 4. If you pray to God for patience, you know what he's going to give you? Yeah, suffering. So just remember that. And so again, your reputation will limit the number that'll ask you out.
Oh my. By the way, let me know when the bell rings. One bell? Okay. Here's another problem with women. And this is my wonderful daughter. And I better not play this back to Dak Bates. She might get mad at me, make too many references to her. But you know, she's very wonderful. And what does a mother tend to do? Mother. Women are designed to be mothers. And sometimes they do that in a dating relationship. Why is that a problem? Here's somebody that's just the old bad apple, the bad sheep, and I'm going to nurture this boy, you know, and I'm going to make him something. What's wrong with that? There's a good to it. But do you want to marry a child, or do you want to marry someone that's going to be your mate? And I've seen a lot of women, they end up falling in love with someone that they're going to want to be their mother to. And that's not going to work in a marriage. You want a mate. You don't want a child. The husband doesn't want a mother. And so that's a touchy area, but one that's important.
And that's a struggle. By the way, you got some answers to help that one along. We can share notes in here, okay, as we go through. A lot of that is going to be necessary as we try to work our way through that. And you try to teach them to go to places where good companions can be found. Let's see if I have it, if I've left out anything critical here. I'm going to have a new outline next week. And yeah, we've covered everything. One other thing, yeah, and this is real, real, real important. Pray to God. Pray, and then pray. And God will bless you. Remember what what Abraham's servant did? He prayed all the time, you know. He'd see a situation and be praying to God. And so let's do that, and I know God will bless us. We're not perfect as parents, but if we are faithful and we trust God, I do believe He'll answer us in those things. I want my child to be determined. The second bell hasn't rung yet, has it? Okay. I know in my marriage, I did not marry until I was 30. But I was determined that I was either going to marry someone that would help me go to heaven, or I wasn't married. And I want my children to think that way. And I hope you can raise your children that way too. Yvette and I are not perfect. We've made so many mistakes. But I believe God, as we trust Him, as we diligently serve Him, diligently seek Him, Hebrews 11:6, that He will bless our efforts. Next week we're going to talk to get a new outline. I think I'm going to actually take part of the outline that I'm using on Saturday night on communication in marriage. I believe that'll be our next outline. Appreciate your participation. We'll consider the class closed.